For April 29th, 2016, we talk about Vampyr, Nioh, and we ask you about your first online multiplayer experiences. Welcome to Level 148. My name is Cole Ross.
My name is David Meismith.
I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Dennis was not able to join us because he went and had a kid.
Yay!
Yeah.
Just like in Junior.
Exactly. Everybody's touchstone for the notion of procreation. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you can go. I think he's got some pictures up on Facebook and things like that. The baby is adorable. I have not seen it in person, but those cheeks are squeezable, it looks like.
It's currently in the burrito stage.
Oh, yeah, all wrapped up.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you know, it's the stage of life where, you know, where so it's just constantly.
Yeah, it's chrysalis'd.
Yeah.
Yeah. As distinct from chrysalids, I think if we said that his baby was a chrysalid, I think Dennis would be very upset if we implied that. That is not what we're... Dennis, it was a poor word choice. Dennis, stop. No. But no, we're super happy for Dennis, Jen, and, you know, just the whole crew over there. And you know, obviously he'll be back when he's damn well ready to. But until then, the show goes on.
This podcast supports maternity leave.
Yes. Oh, man. See, I know you were like making a joke, but that topic actually makes me sad. Gosh, all those women asking for so much time off. It just doesn't make any sense. And the dudes wanting time off. Ugh, the worst.
Mm-hmm.
Ugh. Man, what do they think they're doing? But no, we also have a little bit of a time crunch or concern, so we should probably go into
consolidate
it.
The banter.
Yeah, consolidate the banter. We made the announcement. That is the big thing there. But yeah, we've got the usual three: the brief, the multiplayer, and the grind. And we're gonna start with
the brief,
where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games around us. Ben, what you got for me?
All right, yeah. The only thing I got is the developers of Life is Strange. Don't nod.
Life, comma, it's strange! Exclamation mark.
Well, all right. So the developer's name Don't Nod, which I like because it's a palindrome. So that's fun.
Oh. But,
But they announced details of the next game that they're working on. Apparently, they announced initial details of this before Life is Strange, the first episode, came out, like a week before it. But they've actually fleshed out some of the details of the game. So the game is called Vampyr or Vampire. It's spelled with like a P-Y-R situation. So
Vampyr.
It's the Morgoth spelling.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So just like they spell magic with a K.
So the game basically seems a little bit like Dishonored from the description of it, except for like no like stealth, like Hitman-esque game mechanics
in
it.
Steam the Crow.
Well, yeah. So they talk about how one of the main mechanics of the game is you choose whether or not to feed on people. And so the interesting game mechanic is feeding on people makes you stronger and ups your stats, but you're also murdering people. And so that is supposed to have a quote unquote tangible effect on the environment, which some of the games
like
build.
In real life.
Yeah. Maybe that's what they're going. Yeah, I don't know. So that's like the core mechanic of the game, is that kind of risk reward sort of thing. And apparently if you kill too many people, it has dire consequences. And I think one of the screenshots or videos that they showed is like a city on fire from you feeding too many people. Don't know.
Oh yeah. No, this one person had fire for blood.
It got
everywhere.
Yeah.
Wait, you've never done that? You stay at the Chinese buffet for a little bit too long and all of a sudden it bursts into flame? That's never happened to you?
Mm. I'm always long gone. Like I would go to a Chinese buffet. what you're describing is a carnival of my nightmares. It's a stationary parade of horrors for one Cole A. Ross.
Yeah.
But anyway, so what you're describing doesn't sound like Life is Strange. Are they getting away from the getting away? Are they not doing that thing again where they make the Heavy Rain style branching storyline?
Well, I mean, it sounds like they try and have a similar mechanic with Life is Strange, where in Life is Strange there's a whole bunch of choices you have, and that kind of influences how people behave with you, and you know, like how people interact with you. It sounds like they're doing a similar thing, but instead of being like, you're cool, you're stupid, it's, I'm going to kill you or I'll let you live. So a little bit more extreme, maybe. But yeah, I think it'll probably play out in a similar fashion as Life is Strange did. But yeah, I don't know.
Hmm.
Sounds interesting.
Do we know of like a release window or what it's going to come out for?
Maybe it says it somewhere in the article, but I do not recall. So question mark, question mark, question mark.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Doing a control F for PlayStation yields nothing because of reasons. No, just because it's control F is broken on this page. Oh well. Well, yeah, it really was. It did surface in 2015, according to said article. This concept art looks really cool.
Yeah. And the setting is, it takes place in post World War I in France or Britain? One of those two. One of those two. It's French developers, but
yeah,
I don't know.
In Europe, as the rappers say.
All right.
Hmm. David, how about you? What's your story?
Sure. So this one's just kind of a silly one that came across on Polygon that I found and liked. So Fox News has their early morning show called Red Eye, which basically the format is they have a bunch of comedians come on. It's kind of a talk show where they theoretically discuss the news of the day, although it tends to just be kind of dumb jokes.
It's kind of their one of several attempts at doing like a daily show kind of thing on
Fox
News.
Although it tends to be much dramatically less where it's like the Daily Show and Colbert tend to be like editorial, you know actually are trying to communicate a point. This tends to be much more just silly, just for fun.
Yeah, it's also been on for a very long time. I remember watching this like in like late high school.
Right, exactly. So
not like religiously, you know, just you can't sleep and it's on.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So they were doing I was trying to find an actual date. They were doing a segment, I'm gonna say last week, I don't know, sometime soon, on a professor who compiled a list of skills that every 18-year-old needs to have. And, you know, as proceeding through the list, just, you know, proceeding with, you know, time management, you know, ability to work with people, and then finally getting to the end and number 18, being able to level up your character in The Division. Despite the way Massive nerfed the crafting system, it allowed packs of super geared rogues to gank you in the darkness zone. Thanks a lot, jerks.
So this is obviously one of their writers who plays a lot of The Division who just threw this at the wall and it got through?
Yeah, apparently, because, yeah, I mean, that's something that, you know, obviously is, you know, fairly, I guess, topical in the world of completely irrelevant games.
right, and would read as complete gibberish to somebody who's not kind of in that world. Like, you know, so Destiny has destinies. What does the Division have? Like the language of you know, that everybody who plays the Division speaks, but anybody outside would not be able to understand.
Huh, that's a good call.
I want to see the Venn diagram of people who play The Division and people who watch Fox News.
I don't know, but more likely people who are incredibly high and can't sleep and are watching the news at 3 a.m.
Fair.
seems legit. So.
But I think what's remarkable about this is that, like, this is just another in a long line, and by a long line I mean of like over the past like 7 years. Like, when did Fallon take the Late Show or whatever? Like, when did Fallon take Conan's spot? Or not Conan's spot, like, he's on Leno's now or something? Whenever Jimmy Fallon's show became, like, the late night show, and he started doing a bunch of video game kind of stuff, like, it's super weird and kind of surreal and will land on the front page of video game news sites when you have these people who are talking about video games in terms that are that don't make them sound like congressmen. Like, now, right. These games have come a long way since Pac-Man, and then that's all they've got. So, like, when they speak cogently, even if it is, like, in an exaggerated way like that, like, obviously they're being super hyper-specific just to get a rise. Right. People are like, oh, he's saying things I recognize. But, like, you know, when it's not happening at 3 a.m. and when it's not that, like, hyper-specific, you have Conan doing Let's Plays, even if his whole shtick is video games are dumb, you know, or what's happening in this video game is dumb. You know.
Even if his Let's Plays do look like me trying to play most of those games.
but they're funny, and you know, it's still getting a lot of you know, you still get a lot of that stuff. It's just, it's bizarre, and you know, yeah. I think that, you know, I sometimes fall into that trap, although a lot less recently, of thinking like, oh, this thing that I like to do is super niche or whatever. Like, no, this is mainstream culture. Everybody's onto it. Fox News is onto it. Like,
Fox News is on to it. Party's over, guys.
Well, now it's not cool anymore. Fuck. Just somebody at Ubisoft just pulls the plug on the server at the Division.
It's interesting. I am going to be interested to see at what point it becomes, you know, just kind of like you said, completely mainstream. You know, when we stop seeing so much, kind of like you said, you know, video games have come a long way since Pac-Man type of comments. But
like, people age out of doing that. By which
I mean, it's definitely an aging out thing. I'm kind of interested. Like, that's something I like to. I think it's kind of fun to, like, every so often, you know, put the periscope up and kind of see where things are at.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I also watch, consume so very little television news that, like, it's hard. Like, I only ever get the high points, you know, like, right. when the stuff bubbles into, you know, where I pay attention. So, bleh. Yep. Huh. Yeah, well, I watched a clip of that, and it was like, yep, somebody, there's totally just a writer there who knows what he's talking about.
Yes.
And it's funny, because even I don't know what he's talking about.
But you know that he knows what he's talking about.
Yeah, he inspires confidence.
He apparently knows what he's talking about more than Massive does.
I want to subscribe to his newsletter. Let's see here. So for my story, did you guys see that John Romero launched a Kickstarter?
Yeah, where has he been?
He's been kicking it, chilling, playing it off legit.
I don't know what you just said.
I honestly think that he's just kind of been like chilling, you know, kicking it, playing it off legit. No, I think that he's been in kind of like semi-retirement a little bit. Like, he definitely hasn't been doing a lot, like, at the front line of games, right? But yeah, John Romero of Daikatana fame, and also, you know, Doom. Whatever.
I feel so bad that's like where I recognize him from when. You know, it's someone who actually made great games, but I feel like a significant number of people know him for, like, that one really, really bad game he made.
Well, you know, you can build 1,000 bridges, but if you make one Daikatana, you're going to be called the guy who made Daikatana. You know?
Truly. Truly wise word.
Yeah.
That's like an you know, ancient Chinese saying.
Oh,
right?
it's a proverb. Yeah.
Yeah.
But no, and he's got a Carmack. he's got a Carmack. A not John, but he's got a Carmack. Yep. He's got Adrian Carmack, and they are they've launched this Kickstarter, and they teased it with this video that was basically just the ending of The Force Awakens, except it was Ben's head's going to explode. It was John Romero in the role of Luke Skywalker as Adrian Carmack comes back and hands him, I think it was like a keyboard or something like that.
That's kind of funny.
It was funny because because of how overwrought it was. And it was like, oh, they're going to come back and do a crowdfunding thing because that's what people do now. But the, but the game is called Black Room, and it's going to have advanced weaponized combat, which I don't know what that means. It's a skill for shooter from movement to weapon and map mastery. Huh. And it takes place like in a like in this hologram world, which means that it's going to be a lot like Daikatana, you know, because Daikatana had different levels that were kind of set in different time periods because John Romero wasn't able to focus and apparently still isn't able to. And so this is just Daikatana. It appears to be just Daikatana with a different kind of wrapping around it. See, notwithstanding the fact that we have not seen any gameplay footage, we just kind of have some concept art, including a very slick motion graphic piece of concept art showing a barrel exploding, which is pretty cool.
See, with this description of the mechanics, which are kind of like every modern shooter ever, and then this description of the world, which sounds like a very bizarre, like, caveman-y description of, like, what virtual reality slash augmented reality slash, you know, modern technology. I just get this image of, like, Romero, you know, having been in, like, suspended animation for, like, since Daikatana and suddenly waking up. And this game is actually him trying to make sense of the modern world.
Well, no, I mean, he's definitely he's trying to make some cogent points here. And I think he's really onto something, you know, kind of next wave. Quoting here, you're going to use fast, skillful movement to dodge enemy attacks, circle strafe your foes, and rule the air as you rocket jump. So, yeah, that's going to happen.
You know, it would be actually kind of cool if they made kind of a modernized, like, you know, Quake slash, you know, that style of shooter that was actually modernized, as opposed to modernized meaning like up the sprite count.
Sprite count? What?
Whatever. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, like, you've had a little bit of that, like Wolfenstein New Order. Was something approaching that. I mean, you have to go back a little ways, but like even in the early to mid 2000s, you had, you know, when Doom 3 came out and was more of a survival horror game, you had stuff like Serious Sam or Painkiller, which really focused on, you know, just we're gonna put a shitload of enemies in front of you and you're gonna shoot them all.
Right. Yeah, I think Wolfenstein would be more what I'm thinking, just because like. I don't know, at least Painkiller struck me as still being a little bit, like, stuck in, maybe, you know, just kind of aping the past. But anyways, yeah.
Yeah, so as of the time we record this, I think it was announced, like, the campaign was announced yesterday, or at least at the beginning of this week that this comes out. It has raised $107,000, almost $108,000. And I'm curious, so I'm going to put this in a kick track and see, because that feels a little low. Oh wow, no, it's actually trending toward 1.7 million. So
how much do they want?
They want 700,000.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so they're looking to get over that. I don't know, like, it just kind of seems like they're a little bit late to the party.
In terms of, like, what you mean?
Oh, in terms of, like, getting in on the just either old dev coming back for Kickstarter kind of stuff, or somebody from an outmoded genre coming back and saying we're gonna take it back to this. I mean, like, this is, you know, I acknowledge that I'm hypocritical by being skeptical of this when, like, Ron Gilbert launched Thimbleweed Park under pretty much kind of a similar thing. Like, what if we made this, you know, game that could have lived alongside Maniac Mansion, except it's modern, you know, and this is very much the same thing. This is just from an aesthetic that I really don't, really doesn't matter to me that much, like the hyper futuristic ultraviolet shooter kind of thing. And also just like the language in this, I, you know, I, my tongue is firmly on my cheek, but like the way that they're talking about the game, you had it right on the nose, David, when you said it sounds like he's unfrozen caveman developer. I don't know.
So I hadn't heard of this guy actually before this news story.
Oh wow.
But his Wikipedia page is super impressive with the number of games that he's worked on.
Oh, he's a legend. Like, yeah. Like, you know, if you read like the, you know, the Masters of Id, like John Romero was like, you know, one of the company's level designers, but also like the company's like lead hype man, you know, like like that was a fascinating team and a fascinating time in, you know, video games that just had to like the ability to run circles around everybody else. And like so much of what we have today, like we have that team to thank for, you know, right? Mm-hmm. But like, you know, he really went off the rails when he went to Ion Storm, and you know, well, that like I want a book about that. I want a book about how Ion Storm crashed and failed.
Well, didn't, I mean, wasn't kind of that part of the story just that sort of went, you know, like Wolf of Wall Street, like, you know, cracking stripper parties all the time, you know, that sort of thing.
It was kind of like a precursor to the dot com bust kind of thing. Like, just we've got this penthouse office in Austin, and everybody has their own personal pool table that acts as their desk.
That doesn't seem like a good idea.
No. I think I stole that joke from Arrested Development. Here's a company like theater screening room that ostensibly is meant to like blow our games up to massive, huge size so we could play them, but eventually just became a dumping place for their Mountain Dew cans. Like, apparently, like it's a really depressing story if you read like interviews and stuff that came out of it. But I don't know. I'm skeptical. If that doesn't come across,
takeaway.
I don't know. More power to them. Like, obviously, these kinds of campaigns are built on the backs of people who wish to see this kind of thing exist. So I hope they get what they're looking for. That'd be nice.
Yeah.
If people got what they were looking for.
And in closing.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer section, where we interact with you, the audience, by way of putting out a question and having all of you answer it. It's kind of the opposite of the way these things usually go, and that's what makes us special sometimes. But the question that Dennis put out, or was it Jala? I forget who. Somebody. The question is, when was the first time you played online with or versus a stranger? So the first time you played multiplayer online, what was the experience like? Let's see here. Ben, what does Kilo say?
Kilo says, first time I played Halo 2 with a friend. All he wanted to do was find people trying something neat, like learning glitches or the like, and then ruin their fun until they booted us. Kind of lost my appetite for online multiplayer until Souls brought it back.
So you were an accomplice to him being a dick?
Sounds like it. Robin to that guy's Batman.
Well, Harley Quinn to that guy's Joker.
That's more apt.
It depends on whose perspective you're looking at, man.
I suppose.
Joker just wanted to have some fun.
Oh, gosh, David, what does Steven say?
Steven says, I was a PlayStation kid, so online play didn't happen for me until Modern Warfare. And boy, did I take a dive into that for a while. Had to leave that behind, though, because I noticed I was playing to win and not just have fun, which I understand is totally what some people want.
Yeah, it totally is. We got some shit for the Watch Out for Fireballs episode about Warcraft 3, because neither of us play competitive play. And that is, we made sweeping statements about the appeal of competitive play that maybe didn't come across like we were speaking from our own perspective.
Yeah, that's, I know for me, I'm very much, I view like online playing as kind of the equivalent of like, I don't know, backyard football or whatever, you know, kind of, you know, that more for fun than competitive. So yeah, that's definitely a weird thing.
Yeah.
It'll be fun until someone gets hurt.
Yep.
And someone will get hurt.
Yeah, somebody else. Someone will take the ball and go home.
I thought that was Backyard Fight Club.
Oh, gosh. That's the, you know, you never hear about that one, though. Let's see here. Kyle writes in saying, the first time I ever played online with strangers was back in RuneScape. There were no interesting interactions with other players other than running away from the people who want to PvP. I kept to myself mostly, and that seems to be a common thing I do today when playing with strangers online. I'm sure it's pretty common to be an introvert in MMOs. Yeah, I mean, like, if you look at the way especially, like, WoW has changed over the years, it's mostly kind of moved away from the middle, right? Like,
what do you mean?
They make it incredibly easy to solo and get, you know, get access to, like, solo content. Mm-hmm. And then at the other extreme, you know, the usual reliance on, like, raid stuff.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I still like the Secret World approach of just, you know, having certain missions just be explicitly solo only.
Yeah. Give you something to do.
Yeah.
Ben, what does David say?
David says EverQuest. I started playing right at the Kunark expansion and rolled in Ixar. They were the new race for the expansion and were hostile with all the other races, so you spent a lot of time in your own areas. Grouping was pretty much required, so I ended up finding a group of people that played around the same time I was on and spent a lot of time with those guys and gals.
Yeah. The Ixar was such a weird kind of thing because David is absolutely right. They were attack on sight for every other race, even other people on the kind of evil side. However, if you had access to like a guild, you had the ability to kind of trade up your reputation with other races and stuff in specific kind of things. Like, so they were a bit more of an extreme version of the Night Elf or the Dark Elves. Night Elf was, wait, is it Dark Elf? What? I don't know. Just where your attack on site. And then it just kind of sucks because most of that faction stuff went away when they made the game more accessible. And now I'm putting on rose tinted glasses for, you know, needing to wait 20 minutes to ride a boat across the ocean.
Oh, and heaven forbid you fall off that boat.
Oh yeah, you're stuck in that zone forever. You need to hire a necromancer to get your body back from the bottom of the sea.
Yeah, I freaking was stranded on a deserted island for, you know, several hours.
Yeah, and the guild tried to organize a rescue effort to get you back.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was a huge deal.
did they succeed or fail?
I forget.
I forget how we actually did it. If I just kind of like, I think eventually I just kind of like swam it to like another island and eventually found a dock. Mm-hmm. You know, managed to dodge the sharks.
Yep.
But EverQuest, I really miss EverQuest.
Yeah, that was good times.
We do not need to go into a like half hour aside about how awesome EverQuest though.
Yeah, that reverie.
That's where this is going.
Talked about that on the video game Hot Dog a little bit.
Oh really?
Yeah. Yeah, in that episode that I was on a couple weeks ago. Man, that was fun. I was super happy to be able to join those guys. I was super honored. Let's see here. David, what does Roop say?
Roop says, first time that I truly remember is playing Unreal Tournament 2004 on our very super fast 128 kilobyte ISDN modem on my dad's computer. For some time, I played alone, and then my friend got interested in it too. After a while, we started playing Call of Duty 2, so good, in quotation mark, memories, trying to find servers with the All-Seeing Eye software.
Is that GameSpy? I don't understand what the All-Seeing Eye is.
I just assume that they actually, like, sacrificed a chicken and summoned the All-Seeing Eye.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's how you get your computer to run, but...
But past that,
I'm trying to think. Was 2004 the was there's kind of the was that the last one before 3, or was the one after?
I think there might have been 2007, or 2007 might have been 3.
Okay.
No, yeah. So 3 was definitely like around the launch of the PlayStation 3, or like maybe 2010. I'm not sure, but there was Unreal Tournament 2003 and then Unreal Tournament 2004. And then Unreal Tournament 2 was like PlayStation 2 or Xbox. Like, it was very much a console kind of thing.
And that was the one that was like, it was like third person or something. It was just completely different, right?
Yeah, yeah. It was fun. I remember playing that locally a little bit, but it was definitely a different kind of experiment. I want to make sure that it's clear. I said Unreal Tournament 2, not Unreal 2. I understand those are different things. Let's hear Jeff writes in saying Battlefield 2 on the PlayStation 2. Yeah, talking early adoption. There were typically only enough people to fill one or two rooms at a time, but I just remember being overwhelmed by the prospect of playing online with people for a shooter. As a purely console player at the time, it was a new and exciting experience in only 2 years before Modern Warfare.
Yeah. I was really always sad that no one ever doubled down on like the single player mode that they did for Battlefield 2 on console. Did you ever play that?
This is crazy because this is the second week in a row that came up. Am I wrong, Ben? That we talked about this last week, right?
I actually do not remember talking about this last week, but that doesn't mean that didn't happen.
it was Dennis talking about glitches. This is the one where if you played it single player, you still had these big map missions, but you kind of got a facsimile of squad play by swapping bodies with different squad members.
You were a mind jumper.
Yeah.
And I was always disappointed that there was never a game that like explicitly like set it up as like you were some psychic warrior.
I mean, Second Sight had a little bit of that. Also, there was like possession in PsyOps.
Swapper.
Swapper's like a 2D puzzle platformer. And then Geist. Geist was a similar thing where you worked your way from like possessing a dog bowl up to possessing soldiers and stuff.
And you have to scare them, right?
Yeah, yeah. In order to get them properly spookified.
Yeah, there was possession PsyOps, but it was horrifying.
Yeah, because when you finished, they had to kill themselves. They turned their gun on themselves. Man, that is a bizarre game.
It's a great game.
Yeah, love
it's
the
another
TK.
One. I'm sad they never did a sequel to.
Yeah. Let's see here. That was me. I said that thing. Ben, what does Franz say?
Front says, after reading about the wonders of online multiplayer gaming, I one day logged into a random MUD, basically multiplayer Zork or World of Warcraft with text interface. Instead of the promised rich interactions and vibrant communities, I found myself in the company of a single other player who spent his time randomly molesting NPCs. Mm. Repulsed, I logged off immediately. It took me about 3 years until Unreal Tournament to get me playing online again.
Yeah.
Womp womp.
Man, we've got like a wide range of people and kind of time periods happening here as well. Not implying anything about your age, Franz, but kind of the swing from Xbox 360 all the way back to MUDs is pretty disparate. But yeah, the one dude like walking around and creeping up on you is That is a no-go. That's a non-starter. David, what does Gus say?
Gus says, playing Halo on the PC for me, Team Deathmatch was a bunch of randoms. I was thrown into the red team. As I was running to jump into a warthog, I arrived in time. I arrived to run straight into a blue guy. He stared at the warthog and then at me, and I did the same. And this lasted for about 20 seconds. It was a classic standoff, like a Western, a John Woo movie. Until he started melee attacking me and killed me while my panic shots barely scratched him. Good times indeed.
Yeah.
See, yeah. This was not going where I thought it was going. I thought this was going to, I tried to get in the Warthog and one of my teammates like rocketed me so he could take it or something.
Yeah, as always happened. Yeah. People love their warthogs.
Warthogs were always more fun when they were indestructible, I feel like.
Yeah, I'm really surprised they never like reneged on that and like went back to that being the way it worked.
I'm not convinced that it's not like a bit you can't flip somewhere, especially like from Halo 3 onward. They were all about giving you so much control over it. But like Halo 2, that was one of the big things that just was a huge turnoff was the destructible vehicles. Yeah, there we go. Thank you. I'm having trouble finding my words tonight. Apologies.
Yeah, I mean, I think some of it was, you know, it was very much kind of a time of possession thing, you know, where, you know, the degree to which a given team had control of the vehicles actually had some tactical value.
Yeah. And also, like, when the things won't blow up and you can just kind of knock them around the map like gigantic bouncy balls, that's just more fun.
Yeah, I remember actually at your house spending a significant amount of time just like all coordinatedly throwing sticky grenades on the wheels of the Warthog in order to we eventually got to fly all the way off of Snowy Blood Gulch.
The U-shaped one, maybe Sidewinder. I don't know.
Yeah,
was that the one?
That's Snowy Blood Gulch.
Okay, cool.
With a curve.
Yep. Oh man, snowshoe. Yeah. Sam writes in, the first game I played online wasn't a BBS, the first game I played online that wasn't a BBS door game, which were practically a single player for the most part, was MechWarrior 2, Mercenaries. Mostly I would get scolded for not optimizing my loadouts and then get accused of hacking whether or not I won. Yep, that sounds about right. You're not playing the absolute correct way, therefore you must be hacking. People are the worst. Even back then. Let's go one more time around. Ben, what does Ryan say?
Ryan says, Halo 2 was my first online multiplayer experience and my first foray into voice chat. One time I dropped into a match and a couple of people from the other team kept asking, wait, is that Grimes? I told them it was, but that was part of my gamer tag, so I didn't think much of it. Suddenly I recognized their voices. What I thought were strangers turned out to be two of my friends from school. But I had apparently turned on my Xbox's voice masking feature, so while I spent the rest of the match desperately trying to talk to them and let them know who I was, all they heard was garbled, gravelly nonsense.
Oh, Batman and mode.
And they crushed me into the dirt. Thanks, matchmaking.
So, context for that, Grimes is Ryan's last name. So he got matchmade, what? With his friends and then got crushed into the dirt. But he was and he was only able to communicate via computer noises. Let's see here, David. What does Mikhail say?
Mikhail says, if it wasn't StarCraft, my first was probably a MUD called Aardwarf, which I would play in school because it just looked like I was typing. And that meant I was learning. Teacher, leave me kids alone. I very rarely co-op with randos, and I was deathly afraid of PvP. But every once in a while, I would wander into an area underleveled and get killed with no idea how to get back, which would mean calling on these high-level volunteers that would try to figure out where you died and basically escort you back to your corpse so you could get your stuff. I remember marveling at that these folks had godlike characters and just hung out helping people. On walks in Texland, I spoke to them like they were demigods. Or the 96 Chicago Bulls. Afterwards, I would go on the game's website and look at its gallery of real-life player-submitted pictures and wonder what it'd be like to be an adult who could be a wizard 12-plus hours a day in a fantasy world that included anything from D&D-inspired dungeons to the set of Star Trek The Next Generation and a Simpsons-themed hell arena. Wait, was this Aardwarf that had, like, all this stuff?
I think so. Maybe Aardwolf like had just multiple dimension kind of stuff.
I think I actually played that one a little bit, and I thought I remembered it being just like straight up like ye old fantasy, but I could be wrong.
Maybe it got weird in later days.
I'm not sure.
It's possible.
Yeah, but that's pretty cool.
Wow, their website is really old school.
Really? For a text-based video game?
Huh. But apparently it's still running.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, freaking what? NetHack's still running.
That's not an online thing, though. That's just something you download and run.
Oh, true. But I mean, it's still
available.
Developed.
Yeah. Huh. Oh, boy. I lost the... Oh, there we go. Okay, cool. And finally here, Gordon writes in saying, Team Fortress 2. A few memories of amazing team plays after I left off a well-timed invincibility charge, but not much else. Yeah. I love Team Fortress because you can play a medic and still be useful. Same thing with Battlefield.
See, I could never get into the way Team Fortress... in all the all those games, like, I can never get into, there's never a character I like.
I like the engineer because he fixes things by beating it with a wrench.
Yeah.
It's so just he's like Fonzie. Real life.
Totally checks out.
Yeah, that's how I do it. Now, I just always, like, there's always, you know, all these characters that are like, you know, the engineer with his, like, crazy turrets and, you know, I don't know, the guy who's super fast. I want my class to just be, like, gun haver whose special ability is has gun.
There's the military guy. I forget the class name.
Soldier. No,
but then you have all the rocket jumping bullshit.
Well, like, I mean, like, nowadays with all the customization and stuff, like, you only need to play for like a little bit to be able to craft the class that you want to play.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, Team Fortress has gone off the rails in a good way.
Yeah, yeah. It's Calvin Ball.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Cool. So that's the time that we have for our for reading listener responses. Why don't we rattle off some of our own? Ben, you got any online stories? What was your first online exposure?
Yeah, so I think the first game I played online was Medal of Honor Allied Assault, which is way back when. And that was like on the first PC that I had that could actually run games. But I ever so briefly joined a clan and just played that game a whole bunch after school every day. So a lot of Nazi shooting and Allied soldier shooting. So yeah.
Hmm. Yeah, that was the first, like 2001 that came out, I think.
Yeah, thereabouts. Yeah. I remember I got a mouse specifically for the game that had like the side buttons, and so you can map the leaning to those to make it like really ergonomic. I don't know.
Nice. Yeah. David, how about you?
Yeah, so this one was kind of weird for me. Like, I read the description and was thinking back. It was all of a sudden one of those, like, lost time things where, like, I can't figure out. In particular, I can't figure out, like, the point where I went to where, like, now, or at least, especially in college, you know, multiplayer gaming was almost all I did.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure when I kind of really got into that. I think maybe it would be probably a combination of like EverQuest and Unreal Tournament, the one before 3.
I
hope that's the title that they named it.
Yeah, well, it's from that time when Epic was naming stuff. That's who makes that, right? Epic? Yeah, there we go.
Yeah.
When Epic was naming their games like Friends episodes.
Yes. So yeah, I think those were kind of that. I know definitely EverQuest was my entry towards like MMOs, which became huge for me.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah.
When did you start playing Kingdom of Loathing? When did Kirsten get you into that?
Oh, I'm trying to think.
Because that would have been around like early days for like high school stuff, right? Like Academic Challenge.
Yeah, I think maybe it was actually like junior senior year.
Oh wow, huh?
I think maybe it was fairly late into that, but I'm not sure. Yeah, that definitely also a big one.
Yeah, no, I got into it through Kirsten.
Okay,
mutual high school friend, an older.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. So for me, like I had that similar, like, you know, I lost a decade time quake kind of feel.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, really would have to be somewhere around like, let's say Team Fortress Classic, because, we got our internet, like high speed internet, the fall of 2001. I know this is really late, but I got the big multi-pack for Half-Life, and then Team Fortress was the game in that I really gravitated toward.
Mm-hmm.
Joined a clan, and then kind of like a couple months after that, got into EverQuest around the time the Luckland expansion came out. And yeah, that was a good time.
Which was the expansion that introduced the frog people?
That was as playable?
Yeah, yeah.
That was Lost Dungeons of Norrath, Eldon, in 2004. Yeah.
I thought it was before that. Okay, anyways, yeah, because I think Frog People was about when I started playing.
Oh, well, 2004, weird. Huh.
I know it's kind of funny with, you know, like you said, the time quake thing. Like there's very much like there was some point where it was like, because I remember real early on, like, you know, kind of early internet, my parents were real cautious of like, you know, watch out for them, you know, chat room predators and stuff like that. Which probably there's some legitimacy to, but
yeah,
like
it's a prudent position,
right? But like I can't remember like. There was some point where it went from like interaction with people online with something like I was suspicious of to like something that I now do once a week and record, you know.
Well, you're also an adult now too.
Well, yeah, but you know what I mean though. Like, yeah. I was trying to figure out because I, you know, what was the point where like. You know, like online, you know, all this stuff just became normal.
Yeah. When it wasn't a complete kind of novelty,
right.
A rarity. Yeah. Now I'm not very sure of that. So like, it wasn't Planes of Power. It wouldn't have been the Shadows of Lachlan.
I think it was the same. It was maybe one before the one that introduced mapping.
It was the legacy of Akisha.
Okay.
Yeah, and that was that was their first foray into like miniature expansion kind of stuff.
Yeah.
It was a download only one, and that only like introduced like a couple of different maps in a small like mini continent. Man, we're spending a lot of time on this. But yeah, that was in 2003, and Lachlan was 2001, and that's when I hopped on.
Sweet.
Neat. So thank you everybody for responding into that. If you want to participate in those, you can join our Facebook group. That is facebook.com/thelevelpodcast, and watch for those questions to go up on Tuesday afternoons. And we really appreciate those of you who are there already.
The grind.
Now it is time for the grind, where we talk about the games we've been playing over the past week or so. David, for you, it's been longer. What you been playing, David?
Sure. Mainly been playing Dark Souls 3.
Oh wow.
Hey.
Yeah. So I'm to the first I guess the first real boss. The ice dog person.
Yeah, the Frosthound Warrior guy.
Yeah. So, got to him, actually managed to get him down to, sub half health on my first try, which I was kind of proud of, but then, got hit by the breath attack and I think maybe one-shotted.
Yeah, that fight is pretty tricky because, like, this is the first time they've had frost magic and, specifically, I mean, because like whatever, it's just different color of particle effect, but specifically a status effect for frostbite, which affects your fatigue.
Right. Yeah. Although I did notice, like, it seems like at least stage one of the fight, it seems like the attacks are just kind of stupidly easy to dodge.
Yeah.
Because like it was very much like I was at the point where it was like I didn't have any souls. I was kind of just like running in it to do it, you know, that sort of thing. Just give it a shot. And so I was pretty much just like, you know, not use my shield, just vaguely trying to roll towards him and like successfully dodging most of the attacks. So I'm kind of now prepping to get back for that. So, I know, really, really enjoying it so far. Seems like, I don't know. It seems like the kind of some of the narrative world stories a little bit more explicit in this one, do you think?
Definitely. Like there's a lot more kind of like talk about what your mission is in the world.
Sure.
Doesn't mean that there's not like depth of stuff to look for, especially as it starts to get weirder as you get kind of further out from home base a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like you're very explicitly there. And the mission that they give you is your mission. It's not like a fake out like in Dark Souls 1 where you must ring one bell and then you get there. And then that guy's like, actually, there are
two bells.
Nothing's worth doing. No, seriously, that guy's name is the Crestfallen Warrior. Like, it's total, that's totally his steez. No, but like this, like in terms of the critical path, they shoot it straight.
Yeah,
to an extent.
Although I will say towards that, one thing that does a little bit annoy me is just so far the game's extremely linear, which is I'm not a huge fan of.
That's going to continue throughout.
See, I feel like in this game these types of games, that's actually kind of a problem, because like right now I don't really want to fight this boss, and normally I wouldn't have to right away. You know what I'm saying?
I mean, so it ultimately works out the same way that it would have in Dark Souls 1, right? Like, the only games in the series that you actually have that option to truly go and fight, like, I could, you know, it is a sinner's buffet of monsters to slay, right? You know, is a, you know, Demon Souls and Dark Souls 2, where it's just like, I'm out onto this other spoke in the wheel, right?
But in
Dark Souls 1, you know, you're really kind of on a critical path until the very end, and like they give you maybe like one or two options of what you can go towards. And Bloodborne is pretty much the same way, although a lot more of Bloodborne's content is optional. For this, like, you're going to get to that point where, like, okay, you're going to hit your head. It branches, but not as kind of like thoroughly as some of the other ones do. You're going to have options, but you're always going to like bang your head against that, you know, that one that is blocking your progress down the critical path.
I think I'm thinking of more like, I know in Dark Souls 1, I had pretty much cleared out Darkroot Garden before I fought the gargoyles.
I could see that.
So I mean more that sort of thing, where like I tried to fight the gargoyles, got just completely wrecked and was like, screw that, and like had some other things to do while I was leveling up.
Yeah. You're gonna run into stuff like that.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah. So I mean, like, linear is not quite the right way to say it. Like, it branches, but like it will branch into stuff that is a dead end. That is stuff you would have had to do anyway. But like, okay, you can take the left path or the right path. You're gonna have to do both. If you go left and you hit it and you're like, oh, this is too hard, you can go right, but you still end up having to do both. And they're really just kind of like, you know, instead of progressing like A, B, C, D, it's like A and then B, C, and then D.
Sure. So what do you think of the combat system?
I like it. It's a good return to form. I've been experimenting with different builds and stuff, just for the show. Like, I rolled up like an assassin and a herald to get both of those kind of like hybrid kind of ones after rolling with a pyromancer. My main run for the show is going to be a knight. It's feeling like right now. I like it as a return to form, especially after Bloodborne, which was fine, but like the pace of this feels, you know, more my speed.
See, I was a little bit the other way around. Like, I felt like the starting class I went with knight, and using a shield just seems completely non-viable.
How so?
Just basically, from what I can see, they've majorly upped how much stamina you take when you lose when you block an attack, and then enemies just pretty much attack, you know, just indefinitely. Just chain their attacks indefinitely. And then I've not been able to, like, I cannot reliably get a hit in without getting stun locked, like trying to like block an attack and then you know, get a hit in while they're recoiling. I just get instantly stun locked.
It sounds like you're engaging too many enemies at once.
Oh no, this is like single enemies.
Oh well.
But I know, like, I guess I've been was looking online, I guess there's some indication that like part of it might be apparently poise currently does nothing.
No, there's not. They're like, poise acts like it ought to. Like,
okay,
you
found a number of things discussing that it was supposed to be glitched or something. I don't know. Yeah. Regardless, that kind of annoys me. On the other hand, I'm actually really enjoying doing the two-handing and dodge.
Mm-hmm.
approach.
That's it's the nice part about actually like having options. Like Bloodborne had, you know, great weapon variety in the six weapons that you were able to get. But for this, like, you really are kind of making your own sundae, you know?
I must be
hungry. I'm using all these like food metaphors. Sorry.
I really enjoy just kind of the feeling of like just juking enemies, just like, you know, charging an enemy and then just like tumbling past them and like trying to hit them. It seems like a lot of fun. I miss the what's the rebound system or whatever the game.
Oh yeah, the regain system. Yeah.
I mean I understand they're different games, different style, stuff like that, but I kind of feel like that's something I wish they had picked up from Bloodborne the way they did some of the other features.
You can get a ring that gets you a little bit of that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Cool.
I mean, like, I've just again, like, you're making your own sundae. Like, you are
right. Exactly.
You're sacrificing a ring slot, which is really valuable in order to get this kind of thing. It's not as pronounced as it was in Bloodborne, but it's still there. Like, it is. You know, any health is good health.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, quick Dark Sherpa question. So I rolled knight. To what degree, like, I'm planning on going like melee. That's what I want to do. Am I going to want to invest in magic, either magic or miracles at all?
It really depends. So I haven't dipped into miracles that much. Like my herald has a pretty weak healing spell that just kind of offsets a low Estus ceiling. And so like it's a nice to have, and I'm kind of looking forward to see like, okay, can I use like lightning spears and stuff like that? Like I want to do like a Solaire roleplay. I don't know. Like it's really kind of up to you. What I would say, and like this just depends on how much time you have, like roll a straight cleric and like rush to the spell vendor and try some stuff out. But like you have to build so many stats, and by so many stats I mean two. Like knights start with really low attunement, so you're gonna have to waste like six or seven levels to even get a spell slot. Eight or ten.
Knights, I think, start with one spell slot.
Oh really? Huh.
Yeah. So I'm using I bought the kind of crappy miracle.
Mm-hmm.
That the herald starts with.
Yeah.
So I have been using that just kind of as like a little bit extra healing.
Yeah.
So it looked like. Oh, sorry. Go on.
No. So what I would say is check I don't know how averse to spoilers you are, but like check a table of the miracles that are available to you, and then like get, you know, basically like if it's like 14 faith that you have to get in order to use like a basic attack one, try that and see. Like I think that especially on your first playthrough, you're going to benefit from kind of like playing around and just kind of doing whatever is going to work best for you. Like focus is really good, but like only in the sense that like, okay, I'm going to try and get my endurance up to 30 this time, or my damage stat, like that's going to sit at 20 for most of the game until I, you know, level it up to, you know, to scale. Like you have those general heuristic kind of things, but like, you know, you kind of want to do whatever you can to proceed.
Sure. Yeah. What I've kind of been doing and what a lot of people suggest is starting off for your first build, do like a balanced strength and dexterity so that you can use almost every weapon. So that's kind of what I've been doing. So I really like it. I, not to go too long, but I, one thing I do like that I feel like is really clever and I think is different is it seems like they've very subtly altered the spear and I maybe right now I think just spear attack patterns to where if you do the, you know, attack from behind the shield, you don't move forward at all, so you won't chase enemies, and it makes just straight turtling subtly less viable.
I
really like.
You mean so from your perspective or from the enemy?
What do you mean?
So turtling being less viable does that just mean that you're encountering fewer enemies who are just like, I'm going to stand on this very narrow walkway with a shield and then attack you with a spear when you come by?
Oh, no, no. There's nothing you can do with that? Every enemy and it annoys the hell out of me. But no. From the player's perspective, it seems like it's set up to just not so much to just make the going straight turtling a little less viable.
Oh, so it's just like kind of knocking you out of that complacency. Like, why would I ever get out from behind the shield?
Right.
You know, and I'm going to roll with a weapon that explicitly makes it so I don't get out from behind the shield.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm. Did you play Dark Souls 2, David? I can never pin down your Souls experience.
No, I played one up through I got to the boss of the depths and just kind of got out of it. And then I played Bloodborne up through I think the I beat the witch, and the next thing I need to do is Vicar Amelia.
Yeah, Vicar Amelia's a wall.
Yeah.
Did you go to Old Yharnam?
Yes.
Okay. So you beat the Bloodstar Beast?
Yes. Yeah. I beat him, and yeah, so I've been running with the Great Sword on that.
Yeah. Yeah, no, you just have to beat Amelia, and it's going to suck. Summon help.
Yeah. I need to do that. I need to get back into it. It's kind of weird in that I don't... Well... Bloodborne's really weird for me in that I love the idea of the gameplay in terms of it being like, I really like its thought process of or approach to being like Vampire Hunter Simulator.
Mm-hmm.
And I it's one that I probably care about the story much more than any of the others. On the other hand, I just don't like the actual gameplay that much.
Man, that's a problem.
Eh. Yeah. So, really enjoying it. So, having fun.
And with that, David had to go. He had to work. We tried to get in under the gun, but it didn't end up working out that way. Oh well. Ben, I'm going to throw off to you. I'm curious what you've been playing, man.
Sure. Yeah, I was thinking maybe we could have him have a commentary track afterwards and just add it in.
These guys don't know. Wonder what he's gonna say.
So I have very limited experience with Dark Souls, but I actually saw the boss that he was talking about at the beginning, the one with the frost thing and the roll attack and stuff. So I just wanted to chime in because I typically cannot do that with Dark Souls. Anyway, what I've been playing over the weekend is just the same typical two. I've been playing more Stardew Valley, and I've also been playing Rocket League. Stardew Valley, I unlocked two of the larger kind of goals that they have in the game. One of which it opens up the mine cars where you can kind of fast travel around the world. Mm. And then the other one is it opens up a bus, and the bus takes you to another, it takes you to like a desert. I haven't gone there yet. I just unlocked it, but I haven't. You have to wait for like a bus driver to get there or something, but it gives you a bottomless dungeon if you go there.
Oh, wow.
Or for mines and stuff. So
are you like focusing heavily on a mining track or?
I mean, I guess I'm trying to do an even balance. So I'm trying to do everything, but my lowest one is fishing, which is one of the skills, which is, it's okay. It's decently fun. It's like a click game where you have to like keep a bar centered around the fish that you're trying to capture, and it kind of moves like in a random walk fashion. And it's okay. But to kind of like unlock all the aspects of the world, you have to basically focus in each of the skills that they have. So
yeah.
Eventually, if I don't know how much longer I'll play the game, but if you want to unlock everything, then you eventually have to just work on everything. Yeah. So
can you do all that in the same character? Is there like a global time limit on this or?
Yeah, no, there's no limit. It's very competition off sort of thing. It's very just a relaxing game, I guess. Hmm. So, yeah,
this I don't know if it's the longest you've played a game that you sound ambivalent about. Because like, you know,
Skyrim.
Yeah, exactly. Skyrim. You were playing Beyond Two Souls for a couple of episodes. You know, just I'm not putting this in the same boat as that for anybody who's listening who really likes Stardew Valley, but like, has your disposition towards it kind of changed at all? Because I'm kind of surprised you're still going.
Yeah, no, it's still neutral. There's more things that you can craft, and there's like a lot of things to explore, so it's kind of interesting. You can like raise animals and then build things out of those things. And recently I built, I think it's called like a crystallizer, where you put crystals in it and it just makes infinite crystals. So I don't know. I don't know what the point of that is, but you know, that's the thing. So I don't know. It's interesting to explore, but I definitely think like if another game were to come out that I would be more interested in, then I would probably fall off of this pretty quick.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So like what's coming up in terms of like big releases that you're going to like go after?
Uncharted and No Man's Sky.
Oh yeah, it's coming out in those are both coming out in June, right?
I think one May, one June, something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm.
These are the big ones.
Yeah, so you're going to stop playing Stardew Valley right in time for me to start. So, that'll be good. Maintain the continuity.
One person will always be playing it, I guess. I don't know.
It'll pass around, and then after that, Jowl will pick up and, you know, let the circle be unbroken.
That makes me just want to go back and play Bioshock Infinite now.
I suppose it does. I immediately got that flash in my head. Yeah.
What have you been playing, Cole?
Well, Ben, I've been playing. The big thing was I played a demo for a game called Nioh.
Okay.
So this is a game. It's a demo that's available on the PS4. I'm not sure what systems the game is going to be coming out for. I could pull this up so I actually know what I'm talking about. But this is a game developed by Team Ninja, the same people who did Ninja Gaiden, right? Mm-hmm. The Dead or Alive people. And Nioh is very much a Dark Souls like. Because people are not sick and tired of hearing about that on our shows. But this takes place in like the 1600s, like feudal Japan. You play as a blonde haired samurai guy.
The main character.
Yep, exactly. and you wash up on the shore, or you come to shore to this kind of shady village that has people who are, you know, not quite right. And it plays kind of like you ever play Ninja Gaiden on the Xbox? Love that game. So good. Like that, just that combo-based character action kind of stuff. Love it. Mm-hmm. This plays like a version of that has a lot less flow. It feels like they put this into Seth Brundle's teleporter with Dark Souls a little bit, and tried to maintain some aspects of both. And I'm not quite feeling it just yet. Like, and the reasons that I'm going to say are going to evoke probably a lot of like get goods from people. I didn't finish the demo, right? I played it for like an hour and a half, and I was like, I'm just not making any progress in this, and this doesn't feel good to me.
That's a pretty sizable demo if you were playing it for an hour and a half, though.
Well, I mean, like, I didn't cover that much. Like, I got to the second equivalent of like a bonfire in it.
Okay.
You know, like the second checkpoint. Your character, like, even after you pick up some armor, like, you don't start with any armor, you have to like kill somebody and take theirs. Even with that, you can only really take like two or three hits from an enemy, before you're just kind of down. It feels incredibly punishing, especially in regard, you know, in comparison to something like Dark Souls, where like, if you get caught by, you know, like the scrub enemies, they're pretty much always a threat because they can corner you. If you get cocky, you know, like they can take a bunch of hits. You get overwhelmed, kind of like David explained there. But in general, like, one of them hitting you a couple of times is only going to be like a minor setback, especially if you're running past them.
Yeah.
In this one, like, the, you know,
one hits.
Yeah. Like one hits, but like if you're nicked by one of these like zombie peasants, you're just done for the next guy. Like, most of the enemies that I found, with like the exception of like one small variety, they were all just kind of dudes with swords, and they would just like, yeah, I was like, yep, I've taken a hit. I'm going to have to use one of my three healing items, and then I'm done.
Okay. And so it has some balancing issues.
It feels like, you know, and that, like, if they had, if they would just like ease up on those numbers a little bit, and I know that balancing is more complicated than just numbers, but like, it was like, yeah, I don't feel like I'm making as much progress as I would want to. And the actual like combat doesn't feel like it's, it is conducive to that slow of a pace. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you're coming in and, you know, the, I had two different weapon varieties I played around with, kind of like the katana. You know, medium-sized katanas and then spears, but they both felt kind of the same, right? Like you would do, you know, you have your strong attack and then you have like a weak attack kind of combo situation. And yeah, there's like the combos aren't as satisfying as they would be in Ninja Gaiden because that's kind of not the point. But it feels like they want this to be kind of like fast and, you know, kind of like chain-based or combo-based. But mm-hmm. with the inclusion of the stamina meter, after you, you know, if you swing, it doesn't just, if you swing your stamina out, it doesn't just, you know, take away your ability to attack as it goes up. You actually like get winded and like take a knee and then take a hit.
That's interesting that he takes the knee. Let's sit this one out, guys.
He's like, time out, guys. I got a stitch. And, you know, like the answer to that is probably, oh, well, just learn to manage your stamina better. But it's like, man, coming into this with my, you know, with my muscle memory from this thing that it's obviously trying to evoke, like all the way down to the camera angle and the fact that you have this lock-on combat and stuff, like coming in with this muscle memory to a thing that feels like a decided downgrade to really disempowering you and making it feel like there's not really a way out of that disempowerment, maybe with enough leveling or what have you. But like, that is just such a punishment for putting in one or two more attacks against a scrub enemy. Like in a boss, you know, like that's a thing in Souls, like you'll get greedy and go for three mm-hmm. attacks when you should just do two and then roll away.
Yeah.
But this, yeah, I don't know. Like, I don't know. It just doesn't feel right. It feels kind of stilted. And it feels like it is, you don't have the ability to be as fast or as nimble as they kind of are hinting that they want you to be.
Okay. Can you run on walls?
No, you cannot. Man. And that's a bummer too, because I liked that.
Strike two.
Yeah. And also like the original Ninja Gaiden was so good at teaching you as you went, you know, it was, it was very much that, that tough, but fair kind of thing, right? That cliche. But this, you're pretty much just set up. You're fucked from the get. And it's like, so I got that negative stuff out of the way to get to the cool stuff. Any other questions about the negative side of it? I feel like I'm talking too much. I'm sorry.
No, you're fine. Did you get this through PlayStation Plus?
No. It's a really, really hard to find demos on PSN.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
I like, there's no tab you can go to just say like, show me something I can try. It was like buried like six sublevels deep.
That's weird that they do that, but yeah.
but no, like it's available for everybody, I believe. It'd be weird. I think that by playing the demo, you also get access to DLC or like custom DLC.
Okay.
Which is an interesting scheme. So the positive stuff about this is that when you go to pick up an item, like when you loot a corpse, and they're, you mm-hmm. know, just like this kind of game, there are corpses like strewn everywhere. It doesn't just like give you the item. And also like from what I found, there weren't like memos and stuff, but like picking up an item off of a corpse gets you kind of like a little snippet of dialogue or like an audio log that shows their last moments.
Oh,
or okay. Like lets you hear them, right? So you'll pick up like a bow and arrow off of this dead body and you hear a guy triumphantly say, ah, now we've got a fighting chance.
Followed by a whoosh and a death gurgle.
Kinda. They cut off before that, but like if you walk down along the coastline, like at the start, you'll see a dead body by a cliffside wall, and if you look up, there's a ladder, and you'll hear you pick up the item off of this guy, and it'll say like, oh, pull, you know, push the ladder, and then nothing. And so obviously,
a bunch of dramatic irony. Like, nothing's going to hurt me when I'm climbing this ladder.
I'm 2 days from retirement. The retirement ladder. I'm issuing. I'm talking about those because it kind of like, you know, like those are the most like pertinent examples. Like, oh, this, you know, this makes sense that, you know, they're pushing this there. But like that dialogue bubble got me to notice, like, oh, there's a ladder I've got to kick down, because you got to kick down a ladder in these games, right?
Okay.
Yeah. But there are other ones that are just kind of like little character bits, or kind of alluding to the character of this battle that you are coming late to, you mm-hmm. know, as the demons have kind of taken over. And that's really cool. Like, you know, you're going to seek out these weapon pickups or these, you know, these little consumable pickups because they're shiny objects, but like injecting, like, not just story about those items or descriptions, but actually into like these snippets that you can hear as their souls escape, does a lot. Like, it did a lot to like kind of put me in that place. Mm-hmm. And I think that is a really super interesting decision.
Yeah, that seems like a lot of work. Like, yeah, there's so much more of a cost for a dead body than in the map.
Yeah, so I'm not sure, like, if, like, you know, it seems like one of those things that they would really load into a demo area to say, like, hey, this is something that can happen here, and that the density would peter out. But, like, I don't know, maybe not. Like, maybe it just stays...
Coin flip.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, that's pretty cool. The other kind of cool thing is that for as much as I ride on the combat for feeling a little bit stilted, there's a lot of variety to it because you can kind of affect these different stances.
Okay.
So you have like high, medium, and low stance that you mm-hmm. can take, and you select that by pressing like R1 and then pressing one of the face buttons. Okay. And so each of those has like subtly different movesets a little bit. So like high is very like strong, but kind of slow. But like if you nail it, like I was decapitating people left and right, but taking a couple of hits because, you know, there's like a little bit of wind up and you're left pretty open and you can't block as quickly. Medium mm-hmm. is kind of a mix of both, but like a low stance lets you attack pretty quick, at least with the weapons that I was using, and doing like a little bit less damage. But you're like down there rooting around on the ground, like attacking their legs. And so like...
seems weird with the katana.
Well, you know.
Can
you
just quick stabs. Yeah.
but like it was pretty cool, like trying to intuit, like, okay, this guy's got a spear, so I'm gonna want to like come in high, so like he'll make his one attack and I'm gonna move in past the hurt box on a spear and then just, you know, make the attack, as opposed to like a guy with a dagger. It's like, yeah, I need to stay medium here because I need to be able to react, but I can't compete with him on speed, stuff like that. Yeah. Like those small little tactical decisions that you can make, and then how readily you can switch between them makes it really feel like that, like it's an angle that I haven't seen in this kind of game, specifically one evoking souls like stuff. But like you had stuff like, you know, Devil May Cry, where you had different stances that had different movesets. Like this isn't entirely new, and even like Ninja Gaiden later on had stuff that was a little bit like it. But it's cool to see kind of that like fighting game rock paper scissor being brought into this.
I think it's cool that they have three different speeds. It's kind of weird that they associate them to heights though, because that doesn't immediately make sense, but yeah,
that's just my read on it based on the weapons that I have. There's like there's a fourth one that I was not able to see, like circle like the back stance, and I'm not sure if that's like to make it easier to do like pivot attacks or something like that. Like mm-hmm. I just don't know enough because I bounced off the game like a quarter off of a you know military bed sheet. But that was a shitty analogy.
No, that was nice.
but no, like I saw promise in it. It was kind of like, it was subtle enough. It's not like, you know, I'm up high and I'm swinging my katana like a helicopter, and I'm down low and I'm, you know, just taking little jabs, you know, like crawling at the legs and biting at their ankles. It was kind of like it was real subtle in a way that felt kind of gratifying once I figured out the way those systems interlocked. Like the gears didn't have especially big teeth, so it wasn't quite apparent how they fit together, but it was definitely there. And like any kind of systemic complexity, or at least subtle systemic complexity, is kind of a good thing in these.
Do you think you're going to play the full game then when it comes out, or do you think this is it?
I don't know. It's kind of on the fence right now. Given that my complaints right now are just about difficulty, it kind of feels like I need to go back and give it another shot. I don't know if I'm going to talk about it here anymore, but like when we're talking about Souls-likes or looking at games that are explicitly evoking this, it might eventually become like a duty to go and talk about these, you know, talk about this at length. I don't know, though. It may just end up being one that, like, yep, gonna go in, and maybe once I get over that wall, once I learn how the system works, it'll be just fine. But, like, right now, it is repellent, even to me, how hostile this is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So another podcast is going to start up that's even more extreme than your guys' podcast and swoop you?
Maybe, like, oh, these guys, they didn't get good, these beta boys. No. No. I mean, just like after Dark Souls 3, who knows what's coming up, you know? But, like, there is this weird opening salvo between this and Salt and Sanctuary of, like, high production value in one instance, indie, but in another instance, like, yeah, that's a pretty big game. And yes, it is going to be PlayStation 4 exclusive, and it's coming out sometime in 2016. Yeah. But yeah, that's Neo, N-I-O-H, which stands for benevolent. Yep, it is Neo Nito. Yeah, stands for Benevolent King.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know. But that's all.
Can I mention one thing I forgot to mention?
Oh, sure.
This is kind of off topic, maybe, but I also played Pandemic Legacy this weekend, which is like the number one board game on Board Game Geek right now.
Oh, so, shit. That took down Twilight Struggle?
It did. Mm. Yeah. It's like a relatively new game, but it's like Pandemic, but it's persistent where game rules change throughout playing. So anyway, brief shout out for anyone who's interested in board games. So
I think Gary is playing that. Can you give me an example of like what carries over from play to play?
So basically rules will change and characters will develop new skills. So in the base set of Pandemic, I think there's four or five different characters. There's four viruses. You have to beat all four viruses to win. It's a cooperative game. So in this game, the rule sets for the viruses will change. And then at the end of each game, you upgrade different things. So you either make viruses either easier to defeat, or you upgrade your character's abilities so that they can kind of do different things or better things, I guess. Hmm. So I've only played one game, but there's, I think, 12 to 23 games. Yeah. So, yeah.
So that sounds like you're like explicitly changing the meta from turn to turn. Whereas like most of the stuff that I've heard about Risk Legacy is more on the line of like territory changes.
Yeah. Risk Legacy is similar too, where you have both like an immediate game, how can I win this game? But then also like, what do I need to do to benefit me for like long term when I play the next three or four games? Hmm. So, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, that's cool. Do you have like a persistent group of people that you're playing with?
Yeah. And I think that was something I learned from Risk Legacy is we had like a whole bunch of people and I was the only consistent person who played the game. And so then that kind of eventually led to kind of an imbalance because I had just been in more games than other people. So
yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm. Well, that's good. How many rotations can you go on a game like that? Rotations was the word that I used, but like, oh. Sessions, games.
Yeah. So Pandemic Legacy is built to do 12 to 24. And it's set to be over a course of a year. And so every game takes place in a month. And you have two chances to win in a given month. So if you win the first game, then you've beaten January. You can move on to February. If you lose the first game, you have one more chance in January to play. But if you lose that second game, then you'll have lost that month.
Oh, well.
Whatever that means. So, yeah. Risk Legacy, it's like 10 to 15 games, I think.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Yeah, that's great. Did you mention that team or that guy was going on to work on kind of an original thing?
Yeah, I couldn't remember if this was a story we had covered or not, but yeah, the next game that he's doing is a standalone game. It's also going to have Legacy feature in it, so it'll be persistent across however many playthroughs you have, but it's not going to be tacked onto another existing game. It'll be its own thing.
Oh, cool. So,
yeah.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
Nice. Awesome. Did you have anything else you wanted to sneak in?
That's all, dude. That was my only sneak.
That's fine. Yeah. Cool. Well, yeah, let's button it up.
Mm-hmm. I'll have to answer to this now because there's no one left.
And then there were two. Oh, thank you so much for listening to level 148. We're pretty close to 150.
Yep.
Yeah.
Almost to the one and bicentennial. How do you say 1.5 centennial?
No, we had a whole episode on DTR about this sesquicentennial.
Okay. All right. Cool.
Yeah. That's what we named episode 150. That was sesquicentennial.
It seems like a sesquicentennial ago. Can't even say it. All right.
It's fine. So thank you everybody for listening. If you want to, you know, participate, we have that Facebook group. That's facebook.com/thelevelpodcast. As we mentioned last week, we've seen the power of iTunes ratings and reviews, especially if a bunch of people come out as we approach this milestone for 150. It'd be awesome if a bunch of you kind of renewed your iTunes ratings or took a dip in there. I totally understand if you're averse to using the iTunes app or what have you. Like, it's not fun, but it does help if you're able to take the time.
How about we just ask From Software to release a game like every other week instead?
Oh yeah, no, that I think I can swing that.
All right, yeah.
Yeah, we have contacts, we're good. But what am I thinking of here? Yeah, also there's the Patreon, and that's doing pretty good, and I don't know, tell your friends. I'm kind of running out of steam, so let's do it.
Okay.
Yeah. So I've been Cole Ross at Cole Ross on Twitter.
I've been Ben Merkel at Merkelizer on Twitter.
Yep. And David, even though he wasn't here, he is MoneySmith777 on Twitter. And then Dennis, even though he's not here, he is at DeFuria. Oh, Jala.
And
Jala-chan.
Yeah. Jala-chan.
Yeah. There we go. Is there anybody I'm leaving out? But yeah, stick around to hear some titles. I've only got two.
I've got four, and they're all from you.
Oh. Hit me.
This is a Cole Buffet. Nothing's Worth Doing. A Sinner's Buffet of Monsters to Slay. Fucked from the Git. And Like a Quarter Off a Military Blanket.
Okay. Man, I'm a wordy guy. I have A Stationary Parade of Horrors. when talking about Chinese buffets, and then the one before three. Let's see here. Of yours, so Fuck from the Get probably won't work because of iTunes censoring. Like, it'll be, you know,
I kind of want it to be, well, it doesn't have to be, but A Sinner's Buffet of Monsters to Slay is iambic pentameter.
Oh, God.
It's 10 syllables. So.
Oh, pretty good. Yeah, I'll do that. It's lengthy, but I am not opposed to length. It's the other people who are opposed to length. So let's do it.
Channeled Shakespeare, man.